Welcome to Women in B2B Marketing, a show where CMOs, VPs of marketing, and all strong women leaders in B2B discuss their top tactics, strategies, and tips for building high-performing teams, leveraging trends, and ultimately rocking their marketing careers. Made by and for women, insightful for all. I'm your host and 15-year B2B marketer, Jane Serra. Let's dive in. Okay. Hi, everybody. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Women in B2B Marketing. Today, we have the amazing Olga Noha here with us, who's going to talk through so many pieces of her journey. I'm excited to dive into it. Olga, thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you for having me, Jane. And thank you for everything you're doing for women in marketing, in tech. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Tiny little bit. Hopefully it helps somebody. But Olga, you have, tell me the math, I'm definitely not getting this right, but over 17 years of experience in B2B marketing now, right?
That's right. Yeah. For the past 17 years, I've been helping global B2B tech companies grow by building and scaling their marketing functions. So yes, over 17 years now.
Amazing. Can you walk us through, we were talking a little bit about this off mic, but curious if you can walk us through your journey and how you got into B2B marketing and how you got to where you are today at Splitmetrics.
Right. And thank you for this question, Jane, because I have a somehow unconventional answer to that. I've built my entire career over 17 years, as you know, in marketing, even though my degree is in electrical engineering. And yes, to give a little bit of a background, I was born and raised in a small city in Ukraine in a family of scientists and engineers. So everyone was really well educated, and I knew the value of education and knowledge. And then I earned a degree in top technical university of Ukraine. However, I couldn't pursue this path for some personal reasons, family reasons. I couldn't continue working as an engineer, but I loved it. And also, when I thought, well, what do I want to do as my career path? The fact I gravitated towards marketing because it has this analytical and technical skills blended with my other passion, people's psychology. So for me, marketing is the big people's puzzle. And that's how I decided to pursue that opportunity. But I've got my first job in marketing actually by mistake, because I applied for the position of an SEO manager without even knowing or understanding what stands behind this abbreviation. But I was so amazed with the fact that you can somehow adjust your site so that Google would prioritize it over the other websites. It's obvious now, but back in 2006, it was kind of a newer information
for
me. So yeah. I applied to that position with no knowledge what even stands behind this abbreviation. And then eventually I got a job. They gave me this chance, this opportunity. And I spent 1.5 years with that organization helping customers grow in search results. Then I joined another company in Ukraine and continued my marketing career. And when that company that operated on Eastern European markets decided to expand its presence to the US and other global markets, I was one of the first two people who got relocated to establish this operations. And since 2015, I moved to the US, to Boston, to help organizations, basically international organizations, grow in the US and on global scale.
Amazing. I know we're going to dive into that a lot too. So excited to jump into it. And then you came to Splitmetrics, where you are now, right, as CMO. And sorry, I don't think I mentioned that. So CMO at Splitmetrics, where Splitmetrics, if this is correct, oversee SaaS and services, so kind of agency and tech at the same time. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how it is overseeing two different styles of B2B?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. I spent some time with the company that I've previously been with, helping it grow on the global scale and in the US specifically. And after that, I decided to try something new and continue my career in a newer niche for me, the niche of mobile marketing. And that's where I joined Splitmetrics. And if you're not familiar with the company, Splitmetrics is an ad tech company, basically B2B SaaS organization that helps mobile businesses around the globe grow their apps and mobile games faster and easier. And for that, we are an Apple Search Ads partners. We work with companies such as Babbel, Flop, Canva, Pixart, Skyscanner, and help them grow their results in App Store. And for that, we offer an ecosystem of products and services that are designed to help with that growth. And you're right, Jane, I oversee both SaaS and professional services in the organization. And while these are indeed two different business lines with their own strategies, approaches, and metrics, very complementary. And I believe that we wouldn't be able to provide our customers with the value that we offer without this combination, without this Splitmetrics agency that we have and professional services, because we are working in a very dynamic environment where our customers and prospects always strive to get new knowledge. How do they grow their app today? What worked yesterday and not necessarily going to work today or tomorrow, right? So they strive for this new knowledge, best practices, and real life experience of what works for the rest, right? And this is the biggest value that we at Splitmetrics deliver to our customers. This combination of advanced technology, SaaS technology, with best quality of data, of course, and this in-depth expertise that our professional services experts have. So while, yes, when you're looking at these two business lines, SaaS and services, the metrics you're looking are somewhat different, and the approaches that you tackle in order to acquire customers are also to some extent different. The biggest beauty of it is that one helps the other in a very dramatic way to deliver this value to our customers that, they are striving for. And, you know, software, SaaS, software as a service itself, right, has this services component in its abbreviation. So I think they very much go hand to hand.
Good call out. Yes, it does. It's funny, we never really say the whole thing anymore, right? We just say SaaS and think tech. I'm so curious, which, if you're comfortable sharing, which do you typically sell into? Is it kind of a package deal of the SaaS and services, or do people come to you for to learn more about the SaaS and then you kind of can add this on as a value add, or vice versa? Like they're looking for services, someone to help guide them in the App Store, and you can do so with both.
You know, it's both. We are coming from both directions. And in many cases, it can be a land and expand for us, right? Not necessarily, but any company that is looking to grow their mobile app or game can turn to us for the kind of help they need. If they lack internal expertise and they need somebody to take care of that growth, we can do that through our agency and professional services, and we basically serve as an extension of their in-house team. If the company has the resources internally, the knowledge internal, right, but is lacking the tools that would enable it to achieve better results, we can step in with that. And basically, we know that recent research shows that the biggest struggle or pain point that digital advertisers have is exactly with these tools and technologies. So 78% of digital advertisers were sharing that their biggest pain point is ensuring we have the right tools in place to execute our strategies successfully. So in many cases, the companies are turning to us for tools, but that's not all that they get from us, because with, in addition to the platform that we offer, they would get expert advice from the agency and some recommendations on how they could improve their presence in App Store and their results. And of course, vice versa, with the agency, we are leveraging our platform and proprietary data to drive even better results for our customers compared to some other agencies that they might use.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Do you consider yourselves, I'm asking this because I come from an agency background, and I know a lot of agencies tend to want to build tech, right, to make them stickier with their clients. And so they end up having both, but they're an agency first. What do you consider SplitMetrics? Do you think it was an agency first or a tech first, or really came hand in hand?
It's a product first organization. Yeah. We've added, so we were the first on the market to build an Apple Search Ads management and optimization platform. And we've been operating as a product company for all these years. However, we see this need from our customers to get this real life expertise, hands-on expertise and best practices. And that's where the agency as an additional line of business is coming. But thanks for this question. Still, SplitMetrics is a product-first organization.
Very cool. And for you guys, have you found, I'm going to skip around a little bit, I hope you don't mind in questions, but do you find what's working for you more? Is it events? Because typically in the service, whenever there's a service component, you typically go hard on events to have that face time and build that rapport. I'm curious, what's working for you tactic-wise or channel-wise that you're really excited about in 2024?
Yeah, and thanks for this question. There are several aspects that work the best for us. I will start with content marketing, because that's the foundation of our overall marketing activities, this educational content that we are developing and driving. Very in-depth, very based on actual data and real-time examples. We are offering benchmarks on Apple Search Ads based on proprietary data. We are offering benchmarks and best practices on App Store optimization based on proprietary data and expertise of the agency. So that educational approach is really the foundation of everything we do, whether we are hosting the event, participating in the event, talking to a prospect, reaching out to a prospect through outbound. This educational content is the foundational layer. On top of this foundational layer, something that's not really works for us is, of course, I would say account-based marketing, or it's some kind of a corrupted term already, right? But highly targeted and personalized approach that we apply to talking to our customers and prospects. We know that one size doesn't fit all. We know that the companies are not interested in something that potentially could work in the industry, but is irrelevant in terms of their size or a specific category. So we very much personalize and customize all our interactions with our prospects in order to deliver them that knowledge or value that is relevant specifically for their business case and their account or niche or category. And the last thing is events, to your point. And actually, we invest a lot in both offline and online events and see pretty good success with both of them. Online events help us continue this educational mission and deliver our community the knowledge that they are striving for in a way that is comfortable for them and that doesn't require them to leave the comfort of their home or office. While offline events, and we do a lot of them last year, I think we've been part of more than 40 offline events in the industry.
Wow, massive.
Either hosting our own or contributing to some industry events. So with that, we have this opportunity of face-to-face interactions, which is so much needed, right? Especially after the pandemic, we all learned this lesson, especially with the remote first setup of work, right?
Yeah.
We do take this opportunity to meet with our customers and prospects, spend their some face-to-face time with it, and we invest a lot into that, and it pays off.
I love that. Do you think what makes all of these work? It seems like number one, the content and what the value you're bringing in whatever format is key. So these high quality, deep reports and benchmarks that you're able to pull proprietary information and data. So from that, is that key to the success across the board with these events?
Absolutely. Overall, yeah. I mean, we want to deliver value to everyone we are communicating with before we get anything back, right? We all heard about this great book and concept, the go-giver, right? So we are this go-giver mentality. Even if we always stand for the customer, we always serve the customer and pursue their interests. We're 100% focused on customer success. And even if it means that, we are not getting the full revenue we could get out of it, it's not our goal or our mission. Our mission is to make sure that the customer is getting value from these relationships. Otherwise, why would we have them?
Yes. You've read my mind on a follow-up question here. Well, two. But one is tracking events. I know this is a big thing because at least the big investment, right? The online events are, I swear by them. I love webinars and online events. I think they're so key and still so valuable. Webinars are not dead. But the in-person events, where whether you're sponsoring or hosting, there's a big price tag that comes with them usually. So showing ROI, I know, is often a big question or pressure point for the C-suite and whoever you report to. So what do you recommend? And I love that your attitude is that is not the immediate goal here. It's building the relationship and the brand and starting that, right? So how do you see events here and how do you bring that up to the board or whomever in your case?
It is important, Jane. And frankly, for us, it has become, offline events have become one of the top performing channels to drive revenue growth. However, nice. Showcasing the ROI of the specific events is still the case, right? In our case, and that's something that I think could be changed, right? But in our case, we use a single touch attribution model. And that's last touch for us. So in some cases, we don't even see clearly all the outcome that we are getting through a specific event, right? Yeah. However, overall, we see the picture. And of course, we are looking at both the actual deal closed and the pipeline created. I know it's somehow only one-sided outlook at it, right? But that's the approach that it's, we would say, the most measurable for us, because we all understand that events also contribute to brand awareness, to this relationship building aspect, to trust building aspect, right? Yeah. However, it's pretty hard to measure all these things. So we are measuring what we can measure, and those are contributions to the revenue and the pipeline. At the same time, we know from the salespeople that they see a lot of value in the events beyond these two metrics, right? And they always strive for more visibility at the conferences for us, because they feel this value. They can see it on how their deals progress further in the pipeline, how much faster they are closing the deals. So we have advocates within the sales team for that. I would, my biggest suggestion and recommendation would be to very much align with the sales team who actually goes to these events, as well as customer success team who needs to meet their existing customers there, right? And strengthen this relationship. So my biggest advice here would be to form some kind of a joint squad team and decide about the strategy for each event jointly, because that will help see the opportunities that otherwise are not visible for each of the parties.
Yep. Always aligns. So you're on the same page and not referencing different reports or measuring different ways. That makes a lot of sense. One other thing I wanted to double click on is you mentioned, I believe it's a book, The Go-Giver. I have not heard of this. So can you mention this a little bit?
Yeah, of course. Well, we all know this approach, a go-getter approach, right?
Yeah.
You have some goals, you have some challenges to attack, you go and do that and go and get it.
Yeah.
That's the mentality that is very common around, and especially for high-paced organizations, right? And the really dynamic sales team, this go-getter approach is very popular. However, what if we flip it, right? And start delivering value prior to asking for anything in return. I don't want to go get what I need, right? I want to give you what you need first. And then we'll see. Maybe that would return. Maybe not. The universe will pay off, right? We'll make sure that these efforts pay off. But it's a big mind shift, even though it seems like a smaller change, but it's a big mind shift of giving prior to receiving anything in return that helps achieve much more and that helps build this trust with people and overall people-to-people relationships. We don't buy from machines with all this AI distribution rate, and we are still not buying from machines. We are buying from people. So with this approach, the go-giver approach, that's something that helps me drive my career, drive my relationships further, and achieve better results. And it's an easy read. You can easily read it throughout the afternoon, but it's very impactful.
Even the phrase itself, I love. Yeah. I mean, as soon as you said that, I wrote it down and I quickly Googled to see if it's a book. It is. So I'll put a link in show notes. So thank you for recommending that. That is just a great strategy. And I like there's a framework to it. It's kind of working on the human nature of reciprocation too, right? So if you keep giving and giving, if there's a fit one day, somebody will want to give back to you. So it's like a nicer way instead of in your face marketing and sales.
That's true. That's true. I agree, Jane.
Now I want to go back in your journey. We're going in a time machine. So 8 years ago, you came here with a past company to the US. I know I have quite an international audience of listeners here. So I'm curious if you could walk us through how that came about and any tips you have for anyone listening who wants to move to another country for their career and explore another region and get more global experience.
That's right. You know, thank you for this question, because it was one of the pivotal moments in my career and in my life. Well, basically, we saw this opportunity with my previous organization to expand the business to the US and globally, right? And I wasn't afraid of tackling this challenge, and was basically that's the reason I embarked here in Boston, Massachusetts, right, 8 years ago. And all of those people who relocated at least once in their life, they all pretty much face the same challenges, right? The challenges of building their life from scratch in a completely new environment with the new culture, language, the system. And all of us who've been through that know that it's not an easy task, right? Add the challenge of building the business from scratch on top of it, and you'll find yourself in my shoes, actually. So I had time when I was going to bed at 3 to a.m. to be back to the office by 9, and this flow would continue for months and months. And I invested a lot into making this happen and basically building the organization and the new market, its marketing function. And fast forward 6 years later from the company of with no presence in the US, zero brand awareness, it became a category leader. And I emerged as a stronger leader, capable of overcoming any obstacle. I also have become a mom to a beautiful son. And I've been waiting for that for over 8 years also, right? So that is the journey that tells me actually several important lessons, and I apply them now with the Sweet Metrics, and they help a lot. And those are, first, always set ambitious goals, embrace curiosity and bravery. You have to be brave to even be able to set these goals, right? And to not lose traction on the way, to not lose the this belief that you will be able to achieve what you've said. Of course, this persistence and determination are keys, right? Because I've been through a lot of ups and downs, and probably had more downs than ups, right? But only this persistence that, yes, I want to go further, make this one extra step, and determination about the direction that I'm taking, that was something that was helping me get to this result. And the other aspect, of course, is about purpose. So you want to align yourself with the purpose that you feel is meaningful. Otherwise, you'll struggle with investing all of these efforts needed for that, right? And surround yourself with the people that have knowledge, that have resources, and that you align well throughout this way. That also helps a lot. I never thought that just by asking for some help, I would get much more than I would expect, right? As long as you have the right people around you. So these five things: ambitious goals, bravery to achieve them, persistence and determination, your purpose, and the right people around you, is something that would help achieve these goals, even come through this pretty challenging way.
I love that. I'm going to write out all five of these as good reminders. I'm also curious, how did you get tapped as one of the people to come to the US? Did somebody approach you and ask, or what do you kind of credit for you being selected to lead the team or come with the team?
Thank you for this question. Actually, the company has been focused on local markets initially, and I was one of a few, a handful of people who were exploring whether or not we would want to literally expand into the US and other global markets. So I was already doing some first steps in this direction, doing them from overseas. And I've always been focused on growth and expansion, let's put it this way, right? So I was looking for some opportunities that were untapped for the organization, that were probably somehow unconventional, right? Because at that local market, the company had very significant presence and was working with the largest enterprises back there, right? Where is the other opportunity for growth for the company? And basically, that is one of the opportunities to pivot, right? When you're looking for these growth options, untapped growth options, or the market itself tells you, oh, you need to change something, right? In our case, it was the first thing, but now with, let's say, 8 years later, with the war in the country, it could be the other. Thanks God it didn't happen at that point, right? So that was our option to pivot, and since I was already looking at this expansion opportunities, working on something in that direction, right? me and my peer who was overseeing sales, we embarked on this journey.
I love that. And we're the two of you, I know this is par for the course with the title of this show, but I just love seeing a woman being selected to go launch the company. I need to look into stats on how often this is the case or if it is more often male. I do not know, so I won't put fake info out there, but I mean, I just love seeing that. So I'm curious if you are working on the growth team. So if you kind of see opportunities for that, that's probably the best team to be a part of. And you probably were vocal about, if we need to move, if we need to open up an office there, I'm willing to go and start this with whomever. And you probably raised your hand for it, right? Or did it come to you?
Well, I was offered this opportunity and I really appreciate it. To your point, Jane, the fact that this opportunity was offered to a female was big because I wasn't the only part of the group. We had some male peers who were also working on in the same group, right, working on this international expansion, right? So I really appreciate the fact that it was offered to me. Actually, the business itself was female-founded, and I was lucky with both my previous organization, Creatia, and now with the Split Metrics to have this gender equality, because right now, I'll give you the example, right, of the Split Metrics. We have more than 50% of our staff overall company-wide are women. And in our leadership team, we have half of our leadership team who are females, right, and half are male leaders. So that is big. But at the same time, I know it's not necessarily the case for many other tech organizations. And I would say that's not a coincidence, but mostly my choice, my intentional choice to be part of such organizations that do value this gender equality.
Yeah, good point to be aware of that when you're first going into a company. You also mentioned, I want to make sure we make time to cover this a bit. So you've had I don't even know the right word to describe it, a very tough transitional past few years in a few different ways, right? You changed companies, you had your son, you became a mom for the first time. Congratulations on both.
Thank you.
And of course, on the horrific side is the war in Ukraine. So with all of these new ups and downs and just life transitions, how are you able to stay steady and grow your career and be this amazing CMO that you are? Just how are you able to keep things together and work through what life is throwing at you?
Thank you, Jane. Thank you for this question. That is true. I've spent 14 years with my previous organization. Then I gave birth to my son and I decided that it's time to do something new to help other B2B company, tech company grow. And I joined Split Metrics after this amazing journey with the previous company, 14 years with them, right? But I joined Split Metrics when my son was just 6 months old. And all of that was new to me. The new company in the new country, the new role of mom, and the new organization itself, right? So that was a lot of pressure, I would say. And I did whatever I could to get prepared to that. I was lucky that I could take some more time, and Split Metrics were able to wait for me to step into the new role, right? I was lucky to train my little one to sleep well, et cetera, et cetera. And then 2 months.
Kudos. Biggest accomplishment.
that is biggest accomplishment that helps till now, right? And then 2 months later, this war happens in my home country where I still have a lot of family and friends. And even though I'm safe and I'm not directly affected, right? still, I feel pain for all the people who don't deserve anything like that, right? And who had to become even more resilient to stand against this aggression, right? So I've seen a lot of cases, and I would say that's my case as well, where people would have to rebuild themselves pretty much from scratch and forget the patterns of yesterday and build themselves again. But you know, Jane, those principles that I've shared previously, right? Yeah. Being very much determined and persistent on your way, finding the new purpose in life, that's important for everyone, whatever the age is, right?
Yeah.
I've had the same with my mom, who is 67, right? She had to rebuild her entire life from scratch, finding this new purpose that she would very much align with. Surrounding yourself with people that you know would support you, that you trust, and just moving forward in the direction, still setting the big goals and moving forward to achieve them, that helped me a lot. And I know that anybody who is facing similar situation would get a lot out of such approach. So it wasn't easy, but still, everything is possible. And even when you're taking all these new roles, the new company, the new role of mom, the situation in the world, right?
Yeah.
It's still important to not lose your purpose and not lose your backbone. Rely on your values and move forward.
I love that. It sounds like you've really thought through these five, I'm not sure what to call them. They're five guidelines that you've kind of identified for your whole life beyond career, right? They kind of serve, like you said, as your backbone and you can revert back to those. You're making me want to go through an exercise to think about what my five are, which would probably be very similar to yours because you've baked out such great guidelines, but I think that's probably a great exercise. I'm curious, when you came up with these five, did you go through any kind of exercise to think through like what's gotten you through and to where you are today and through life's ups and downs? Did you do this kind of self-reflection, or you happen to know these five are what got you to where you are?
You know, Jane, I mean, these are part of my values throughout my life, but they don't sit in my head as they are, as a list of five values or guidelines, right? Yeah. I've worked with a lot, when I say surround yourself with people you can rely on or learn from, right? So I've worked a lot with people in different roles who were my life coaches, who were my therapists, who were my trainers, like fitness trainers, right?
Yeah.
Or just whom I could get this wisdom from. And I just recently analyzed that all of them were women. I wasn't looking for intentionally for women, but if I look at who surrounds me, whom I learn from or can rely on or get support from, all of them are women, even though historically I really get along well with the men. A lot of my friends are male friends, but this women power is irreplaceable. So when I was working with them, right, each of these guidelines was shaping out of these interactions and out of this personal growth that I was obtaining. I invested a lot throughout this challenging time. I invested a lot of my personal time and even financial resources, right, into this personal growth. And that means a lot. And basically that helped me come up with these five principles that are near and dear and to me and are really helping. And it's not like I had the list in my head.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. But it does something when you put pen to paper, or even if it's finger to keyboard, right? But when you write it down in some way, shape, or form, and you get it out of your head and you realize, like, this is what matters and these are my values written down and my principles. It just, there's something about having it there. I love that you did that.
Things like you do, like we are doing together, help a lot with that, right? That's the time when you can sit down with pen and paper.
Yes.
And that is also part of this that personal growth. So thank you for this opportunity to share it with you today.
Aw, thank you. I'm so glad that it was able to like help you think through these things. It's interesting. I never thought of that benefit. I completely only see the selfish side of wanting to learn from gurus like yourself. So I'm glad you get something out of it as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I know we're out of time, Olga, but thank you so much for sharing so much of your story and how you got to where you are today, and just so much respect for your career and your journey and everything you've achieved despite like ups and downs and changing roles and everything, right? And 14 years at one company, I mean, celebrate that. That is unheard of in marketing. So kudos. That's amazing. And thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you for having me and for everything you do for women in marketing. I hope that that would be helpful and inspiring to someone. Please feel free to reach out if I could be of assistance.
Yes. And where can everyone find you if anyone wants to reach out?
Of course. Find me on LinkedIn, Olga Noah, and I will be happy to be in touch.
Perfect. I'll put a link to your LinkedIn in show notes. And everyone listening, thank you, Olga. And thank you, everyone, for listening. If you like the show, review the show, give us an honest rating, and it helps us get better. It helps us reach more people. As with every B2B business, right? Every review gets you more reach. So appreciate the love. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye.